There goes Lance in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this gets pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What is up, Bison fans? This is your host, Ross Uglum, publisher of Bison Report on 24/7 Sports. And what a big time show we have for you guys today. I've got my guy, Trevor Gebhardt, holding on the other line. Trevor, as everyone knows, is a South Dakota native. Nothing bigger than marker week for Trev. We've got two fantastic interviews for you with big time Bison. We've got defensive back Josh Hayes and offensive lineman Zach Johnson. And then we're going to dive into, college game day. We're going to dive into South Dakota State. I mean, this is easily, I think, the biggest week of the season. So let's get rid of the news. Let's get done with it. Let's get past it. The first thing was that Cordell Volson, for the first time this year and the first time in his career, was named the Missouri Valley Conference Offensive Lineman of the Week, joining Carson Shaning and I believe also joining Zach Johnson as winners of that award this year. Maybe Radens has won it as well. I'm sure all five guys at some point are going to win that. That's kind of the level that these boys at the Rams are playing at. Really cool thing right before Coach Entz came up for his press conference on Monday, Coach Richmond from the basketball team sat down and let us know that North Dakota State was planning a Landon's Light game with Sanford and Gate City Bank, something where they've got a flash sale for $6 tickets, I believe. And then for every attendee of the exhibition game against Dickinson State, they're going to donate. I think both Sanford and Gate City are going to donate $1 to cancer research. And, you know, that's something that we did here at Bison Report when we donated $5 for every new subscription to BR. Hey, anything that you can give anytime and come into this game, obviously, is going to be a way of giving. But anything that we can do to beat cancer is just it's necessary. It's something that is really important to me and something, obviously, that's in the hearts and minds of the NDSU basketball team and their relationship with Landon Solberg. Some recruiting news, I believe, until I hear differently, that all three of these are walk-on commits. But, hey, I mean, you see Costner Ching making plays. You see Matt Beegler making plays. There are a very, very long list of walk-on guys that have made a big difference for NDSU football. So these things don't come lightly. Joe Diak is a wide receiver type body or a defensive back quarterback type body from St. Thomas Academy in the Twin Cities area. You guys will know Nathan Goldade from West Fargo Cheyenne. He was a tailback with 1,100 yards rushing and 18 touchdowns last year. He blew out his knee at a basketball camp this summer, kind of threw a wrench into his football recruiting, but really, really stoked, I think, to be a Bison. In fact, I had a chance to chat with Nathan, and he it was about 11:30 at night when he responded to my DM, and I said, you know, it's a school night, whatever. He goes, dude, I'm so jacked up to be a Bison, I can't sleep anyway, so we might as well do this interview. So that's the level of excitement that Nathan was feeling. And then Bryce Friday, an offensive lineman from Marquesan, Wisconsin, and you know, there have been some excellent walk-on Rams as well. So some news certainly with the North Dakota State recruiting class, and this is a big class, but a lot of them are walk-ons because of the small outgoing senior class. And I think it's been a really impressive group of kids that Coach Entz and his crew has been able to get to buy in at the walk-on level, because as many of Trevor's teammates found out, you know, you can certainly earn your way to a scholarship. That is for sure. And with that, we're going to bring on Trevor Gebhardt. Trevor, how you doing?
I am doing fantastic.
this evening, Ross. Tomorrow is my Friday for my work schedule. No softball update, but we do have a big game tomorrow night. So if you're actually really curious about that, ask me on Saturday about how we did.
Yeah, tomorrow's your Friday because your publisher sent you a panic text message making sure your ass got to game day. That is for sure. And we're really, really excited about that. We talked a little bit about game day when we did our kind of our reaction pod to the announcement. But I want to get into some of the sort of minutia things and wondering how much of a time commitment South Dakota State's going to have to make, because Matt Entz made it really, really clear on Monday that they did not anticipate having any contact with ESPN. They were going to let this be a South Dakota State thing. I'm sure if ESPN contacts them and wants something, you know, during normal media availabilities, obviously they're going to do it. But Coach Entz wants these guys absolutely locked in. What was your when you played and you were there both years, what was your requirement or what was taken from you from a time perspective by the folks at ESPN? What was required of you when game day came to Fargo?
For me personally, it wasn't a whole lot. You know, we didn't have any extra requirements outside of our normal media requests, practice schedule, that sort of thing. The only adjustment we had was on Friday, which is, of course, we don't have a practice. We have a walkthrough and a plethora of meetings. That schedule got adjusted for us to be able to go and visit the game day set. So, you know, your one Friday that you're used to a pregame routine or a day before the game routine, that got thrown off a little bit, but to the extent of where, you know, you feel out of rhythm, yeah, I think the excitement far exceeds that. So, you know, there was a handful of guys that had to do like some stories as far as like feature clips of them featuring NDSU and the program that we had built up. So a few guys had to do that, but the guys that even had to do that said it wasn't much. I think they would just go in between classes or whatever, or right after lunch. So nothing too exhausting, but I do know the administration and the media personnel in Brookings is they got their hands full.
Yeah, it's a major deal, obviously. And I think ESPN does a pretty good job of sort of walking that line and making sure that while they know what they're bringing to the university is a big deal, at the same time, they also understand that, you know, Coach Stig is trying to win a football game, as is Coach Entz. They both are focused on a massive Valley game. I mean, the winner of this game is pretty clearly in the driver's seat to win the conference. Both teams, I believe, to this point, I mean, I know to this point, are undefeated in the Valley. And this is, you know, Lance and Ants would tell you it's the biggest game this week because it's the only one they have. It's also the biggest game of the season. I mean, that's certainly where we're at. I want to also ask you, though, Trev, as somebody who grew up, and if you guys haven't read, and Trevor twisted my arm, I finally gave in, and Trev's takes this week were free. They were available to the general public, and from what I've seen, a lot of you have taken the opportunity to read that, and really some cool stuff about growing up a Jacks fan and being raised in South Dakota and wanting to be like your dad and things like that, but ultimately finding out that North Dakota State was where you were wanted and North Dakota State is where you were going to call home. I want you to kind of go back, though, to being a South Dakota native and being around the Jacks program and kind of where that football team came from, where the athletic department, because, I mean, it's kind of a basketball school and a track school historically. Now, they have sort of been drug along by North Dakota State into being one of the elite programs in all of FCS football. But when they were Division II, they were not particularly good at football. I mean, any of the, you know, historical stat sheets, almanacs, whatever, you can find that this South Dakota State football program was not a powerhouse by any stretch of the Division II imagination. What does this mean for Brookings? What does it mean for South Dakota? You know, millions of people are going to watch this show. They do every week, and they're not going to stop just because it's in an unfamiliar place. How far have they come? And if we're going to be honest, how much of this is who they're playing?
I would say 90% of it is because of the opponent. I don't think I'm outlandish by saying that at all, and I don't think that's a secret to anyone. Now, I always hesitate to do this. Some credit has to be given to South Dakota State, because I don't think College Game Day would be going to Brookings had NDSU's last loss been in Brookings. So I don't think we can disacknowledge that fact either. But you know, if NDSU has not had the success that has occurred over these last 8 to 10 years, clearly College Game Day is not showing up, and no different than College Game Day coming back in my day in 13 and 14. It was a salute to North Dakota State, what has occurred there, the type of culture, the fans that we have, because that was the reason they came back in 2014, because of how successful the show was the year prior. As far as the effect on the state of South Dakota and that university, you know, I'll be curious to see what the production ends up turning out to be. You know, there's certainly a love affair with ESPN and North Dakota State Athletics. So how much of that do they kind of, I don't know, quote unquote, show favoritism? I don't know. Do they feature the FCS? I surely hope so. Do they highlight Brookings and South Dakota State because that's where they're located? I'm sure they will to some capacity, but I don't think anybody can turn a blind eye to a large reason why they are there. And South Dakota State, they will feel a positive effect because, you know, they are in a different spot with their program than we were when Game Day first showed up. But there was a noticeable difference in our program and how it was viewed nationally and by even upper level recruits. After that point, just because, you know, kids get that type of viewpoint on your program, it changes the game entirely, because College Game Day just doesn't show up to your home if you're terrible, you know? So I think it'll help both programs tremendously. Obviously, I think I'm stating the obvious, but it will be, and I thought about that all week, and it's not something I've even talked about, not even in my takes, that I think it'll be interesting to see how much is highlighted of North Dakota State and South Dakota State and the subdivision as a whole.
Yeah, and that's one thing I'm going to definitely be paying attention to. You and I are going to be fortunate enough to be credentialed. We're going to be kind of around the backstage area the whole time, but are they going to make this about the Bison? Because if they make it about the Bison, I think you're going to have, and they won't care, and they shouldn't care, but you're going to have a lot of outrage from FCS fans in general, and certainly South Dakota State fans that are already sick of NDSU basically owning the division. And you can see, you know, we're lucky enough to be invited to a couple of FCS fan groups to occasionally share our work, and you know, you can see kind of the Bison fatigue and how much everyone else is sick of hearing about NDSU. And of course the answer to that is, okay, all right, well then beat the Bison, you know, get it done, stop their run. And until then, quit complaining. But, if this turns into an NDSU love fest at South Dakota State's campus, there are 100% going to be hurt feelings. And I don't think it's even close to realistic to expect anything different. I will be very, very tuned in to how much Bison time is spent, because you're absolutely right, Trevor. The stone cold reality of the situation is, if this was any other FCS opponent, there is no shot in the world that game day is going to this game. There's just absolutely no chance. All right, that's enough about game day, because we're certainly going to have a chance to recap it. Really exciting news for BRTV post game. It is going to be hosted by former Midcoast Sports sideline reporter and host Carla Metz Gebhardt. And Trevor and I are going to be able to do the show together for the first time. So really be looking for that late on Saturday night. Going to try and get that posted before I kind of head down the road. I'm going to cover the Packers and Chiefs in Kansas City and just kind of keep moving down I-29. But before I do that, our recap of game day, our recap of the game, we're going to have you guys absolutely covered to the max after the Dakota Marker game. For sure, win or lose. What we have for you now, though, is a special treat, and it's a guy that we've been talking about, Josh Hayes. I spoke to Josh about that C.J. Smith comparison I keep making. I spoke to Josh about a number of different topics, playing with Marquise, how big of a deal starting as a true freshman in the national championship was to his development. And I think we had a really insightful chat that I hope you Bison fans enjoy.
Here with North Dakota State junior defensive back Josh Hayes. Josh, how are we doing?
Doing good. Good.
I want to add, and this is kind of going into the Wayback Machine here, but something I brought up on our show a number of times, how much do you think that both of the Jaylens being hurt for that national championship game against JMU helped you and Marquise? Because you guys were young, young kids thrust into as big a position with, by the way, an All-American receiver on the other team. How much are the 2019 starters at corner benefiting from that game?
Just being able to play in pressure situations, being able to go out there and feel comfortable in any environment, and also being able to play at a high level and being able to move around how we're supposed to.
What has your kind of designation been this season? What have your responsibilities been? Are you generally the corner opposite the nickel? Are you playing field, boundary? What are you guys – are you following receivers? I have a hard time keeping up with it.
No, honestly, me and Keith just decide which sides we want to go on.
That's a lot of freedom.
Yeah, before the drive starts, just like, hey, which side do you want? And most of the time, we usually want the opposing team sideline, talk a little smack over there. So we'll rock, paper, scissors, or we'll switch off back and forth, whichever.
You and Keese kind of strike me as C.J. Smith and Marcus Williams. I don't know if you've ever heard anybody make that comparison, but Keese gets his hands on the ball all the time, whereas you're more of the lockdown guy.
Yeah.
Your opposing receiver doesn't usually catch a lot of balls, and, you know, Marquise, he gets his hands on a lot of stuff, but maybe gives up a little bit more. You watch any film of those guys or kept in touch with some of the Bison corners from the past?
I wouldn't say I've kept in touch with them, just because it was a long time. Just
me. I never
got a chance to really meet them or anything. But, you know, I definitely watched film, just saw how they went over, how they did things, stuff like that, just little techniques that helped them improve their game, and just saw how they were able to move around at this school and at this level.
So one of the things that interests me the most is the conversation that these guys have been having about not so many pass breakups and a few more interceptions, more turnovers in general. You got a forced fumble, and everybody remembers that forced fumble this year, but what do you guys need to do better to come down? Because are you still looking for your first career
pick? Yeah, I'm still looking for my first one, but I think we just need to be more ball hungry. We're more on the defensive side. We just don't want anybody to catch anything, anything on us. So we don't really take that chance to, okay, instead of going to swat the ball down here, let's go try to catch it. And maybe instead of trying to be in the perfect position to get those interceptions, we should just go for the ball sometimes.
Talk to me a little bit about Destin. Destin is a younger kid, again, another guy, because you weren't able to redshirt, right?
No.
They pulled your redshirt as well. So Destin's another guy who they felt like needed to get on the field right away. It's kind of coming in the way that Jaylen did when Jaylen Allison first started playing outside corner when it's time to go, time to go to nickel. How is he progressing, and what are some of the things that you feel like he does well?
DT's really, really smart. That's a smart kid. He just, with all of our checks and stuff like that, he's just on top of it. And trust me, we have a lot of checks.
Yeah.
We have a lot of checks. So it's just, he's just always on top of the little things. He's real meticulous in his work. And Just his technique every day, he's like focusing on something. There's something that he can get better at that he focuses on, and I see him doing that every day. Just keep, and he's just continually growing and getting better.
Speaking of the checks and stuff like that, Robbie Grimsley, it seems like you played here for 20 years.
Yeah.
Like I was, you know, a starter basically the second he got to campus and played a million snaps. How different has it been playing without Robbie? And also, how key has it been to have a guy, the quality, not only the player, but the leader that James Hendricks is?
Without Robbie, honestly, with Mike Tutsi, he honestly has stepped in and took that role of just being a real down-to-it guy. You know, he's making sure everybody's on the same page, making sure we're checking on both sides, communicating. Even if he is on the other side of the field, he might check, and if he sees something that doesn't look right, he'll say something about it. So I think Mike stepped in and kind of came into the role that Robbie was in as the kind of the leader and the lead communicator in the secondary. And then with Jimmy, he's just a great guy. It's just easy to talk to. You know, you make a mistake, he's not one of those guys that's going to be like, hey, you got to get this. Hey, jumping down your throat. He's going to talk to you, make sure you understand it, and make sure we're all on the same page.
Now, did you play – you came in as a safety, right?
Yeah.
Did you play corner in high school?
Nope.
No, you didn't. So what has that kind of been like? And the other thing I want to ask you about a little bit is Coach Morgan and working with him, being fortunate enough to not lose your position, Coach, in kind of the transition, and maybe some of the differences besides the differences between Coach Braun and Coach Entz, because obviously, you know, Coach has a different level of input on you guys defensively now.
Well, just me coming in as a safety, honestly, it lasted all of a week.
Okay.
My first week up here, they saw, because Dawson Weber came in as a corner, and I came in as a safety. And after just looking at us, after the first week, quick switch. So that happened quick, so I didn't really even think about the transition or anything like that. And then with Coach Morgan, I mean, it was just nice to have a familiar face, because there was a lot of face changes in our upstairs.
Sure.
So it was just nice to be able to, hey, coach, talk to my position coach, and he'd be the same one that was here before the whole big move and everything.
Man or zone?
Man.
Okay.
Man.
I got to say that. What have you seen from 15 on the other team that makes him an excellent player? Because you guys have played against some pretty tough receivers so far this year. 80 was pretty successful for Northern Iowa.
Yeah.
Missouri State was cooking a little for a while on those slants until you guys switched up leverage a little bit. But what does Kate Johnson do that maybe you guys have to pay attention to?
He's a real fast guy. He's fast. There's no trying to underplay that. He's a fast guy. He got wheels on him. So just have to get hands on him. He's good catching the ball in space. I mean, in traffic, he's good at just going up and getting the ball if he needs to, and just an all-around athletic guy.
Speaking of athletic guys, I don't know if you've really gone up against a run-first quarterback yet this year. Yeah. A lot of pocket passers, whether it's Butler, UND, even Huslick, he's a decent athlete, but he was going to try and make plays from the pocket, not stretch. Jabari Gibbs will probably try and stress you as a corner. If you're a man, obviously it's kind of not your problem. But when you're in zone, you have to come up, you have to tackle well.
Yeah.
What does he show you guys that maybe you didn't see as much with Taryn Christian?
He's more of a run-first guy with Taryn. He would run the ball when he needed to, but if he had a chance to make a play throwing the ball, he would. And he's not afraid of contact. He's going to run into you. He's going to try to run straight through you, and if you let him, he will.
NDSU brought in some pretty highly touted young cornerbacks. Who's a young corner right now that maybe the fans don't know his name, haven't seen him play, but who do they need to be watching for?
Terrell Hall.
Okay.
Terrell Hall.
You want to expand on that?
Yeah, I mean, he's a all-around athletic guy, like I just said. He's smart kid. He's always on his P's and Q's. He does everything he needs to. He's never in trouble. And on the field, he is actually – he's something to be messed with.
Coach Entz can't keep his name out of his mouth either.
Yeah, so. Terrell Hall is good.
All right, so finish this sentence for me, and I'll let you go. North Dakota State wins on Saturday if
– we play our game. We play North Dakota State football.
We definitely want to thank the North Dakota State Sports Information Department for making Josh available, and we want to thank Josh for his time. That was a a great interview and something that you guys can check on if you want to watch the video version. It is a BRTV episode this week. We've just been absolutely jam-packed with content all week, and brings a smile to my face for sure, because we're always trying to give the people what they want. All right, let's go on the Wayback Machine. Trev, let's talk a little bit about your time at North Dakota State, and I want to ask you a simple question. What was your record against the Jacks?
Undefeated.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I should have known that. I just wanted to give you an excuse to say it. was that 5-0 or 6-0?
Let's include my redshirt year so we can say 7-0. Makes me feel a little bit better too. Any chance. I can get, buddy. Any chance.
So, yeah, for sure. If you don't mind, give the, you know, kind of Cliff Notes version of what you wrote today and your prior relationship to South Dakota State while you were growing up, and then kind of your recruiting process and how you ended up, you know, becoming a Bison.
Yeah. So, I mean, if, you know, there's anybody listening that is not really, you know, everyday listener of the show, we certainly appreciate those that do. But if you're new and haven't read the article, please go check it out. Definitely kind of open up to a little bit of my personal life into that. You know, I grew up around Brookings, South Dakota, as my dad's side of the family is all from Elkton, South Dakota. And they're, you know, it's a hop, skip, and a jump. You know, it's one exit down off I-29. And so I spent a lot of time there growing up as a kid. I had a lot of family go to school there, including my dad and his twin brother, Irvin. They both ran track there. They set records. And I did mention in the article that I needed to be fact-checked on some of those records. They have, in fact, gotten beaten. So they're now second place in a couple of those relays from the 80s. But, you know, I wanted to be like dad. I wanted to be like my father. He's a man that I look up to. He was the best man at my wedding, and he has been my biggest supporter my entire life. He's been a father. He's been a coach. He's been a mentor. He's been a teacher. Pretty much every role you can play in somebody's life, he has done that for me. And you can never repay somebody that does that for you. And so naturally, when you have somebody that takes care of you that well, you want to be like them. Well, Dad was a stud in Brookings at South Dakota State. And so I would go to basketball games and football games and anything under the sun that involved Jackrabbit Athletics. And I was a fan. I was never like – it's funny when I reflect on my time in Fargo too, because – I was never connected. I'd never felt to the program like some of the kids are in Fargo, if that makes sense. You know, in a story that Carla wrote, ironically, for the 2017 Dakota Marker game, she wrote a story about my friends and myself and our time in Fargo. And within that, I tell a story about a young kid at TJ Fridays handing me a sheet of paper that had you know, like a stick figure, and it said, "Go Bison number 3. And he said, "Good luck at the game on Saturday, Trevor." And, you know, I never felt that, like that encounter that I had. So, you know, it wasn't like a need and a must, but I was a fan. I was definitely involved with their athletic programs, and any chance I could be around blue and gold stuff, I loved it. And I get into high school and I start getting recruited. I start getting contacted by schools, and I got a handwritten note from Terrence Samuel, who is now the receivers coach at Michigan State. And within that letter, he writes, "Hey, Trevor, I just want to introduce myself as your next wide receiver coach." And he wrote more than that, but that was what stuck with me, and it went a long way, because I could tell it was genuine and I could tell he had an interest in me. And my relationship with NDSU started at that point. And I could say I guess you could say the relationship just naturally progressed until they made an offer in the summer of my senior year. And at that time, I was also getting heavily recruited by Iowa. They offered a preferred walk-on spot, which I considered very seriously. And at one point, I was probably going to go there. And then I went on my official visit. I met a guy named Brock Jensen, and we became the best of friends. And we still are to this day. And, you know, I guess you could say the rest is history, but rewind back to when I got offered by North Dakota State in the summer of 2009. I went to a camp in Brookings. Ironically, they still had the 3-day and 1-day camp that they go back and forth on Twitter all the time about now. And I went to Brookings for the 1-day camp, and giving myself a little pat on the back, I was performing very well. And at that point in my career, I was probably performing the best I had to that date. And so when I got done with that camp, I fully expected an offer would come. Some of the one-on-ones that we did, I beat kids that had been offered already, and it never came. They never offered me a scholarship. I won't go into the words that were described to me at that point, but I knew I was going to be in Fargo right then. And I never looked back. And, you know, I reflect on my time as a kid. You know, everyone talks about their childhood and how that does affect a person's life and how it can, you know, affect them either positively or negatively. And, you know, I think for me, it didn't work out the way I was thinking it would when I was a little kid. And, you know, how many people's lives actually do that? I don't, you know, it's very few, but I'm very grateful for the experiences I had growing up. I'm very grateful for the parents that were able to expose me to college athletics and understand that being a part of a team and doing something greater than yourself is important in this world. And, you know, I had an opportunity to go do it at a place that fit that mindset and a culture that was the best for me. And, you know, resentment, whatever, it's, you know, it is what it is. Back then, I'm over it at this point, you know, because it's so far removed. But, you know, at the time, there's a little bit of a chip on your shoulder for it. And I think that's where my passion for this rivalry stems from, clearly. And it's just something that it starts off that way, but I'm now very grateful for, because I have the most wonderful family. I have the best bride and mother in the world. I have the most beautiful daughter I could ever imagine. And I don't know if that's possible if somebody says you're not good enough to play here, you know? And it is what it is. And I still, you know, obviously have close connections to both. I have family that are big donors to South Dakota State that don't miss a game in football and basketball. I clearly have many friends and families, and my heart lies in Fargo. And so it's just kind of it's cool for me to see where this has gone in terms of athletics in both states, because growing up, that was impossible. When the announcement to Division I, it was impossible. When I went to Fargo, winning a national championship was impossible. And I look back on all of it, and it's like, this just goes to show you that, you know, the old Nike slogan, impossible is nothing. So, you know, kind of going on a tangent there, long rant, but that's kind of where, you know, my background is. It summarizes, you know, what I wrote in my midweek thoughts with some additional stories included there. But to me, it's, man, it's, I don't know. I think Saturday I might be emotional. I don't know. I'll be excited. It's just, it's crazy to me what it has come to. And it's special. And I hope that everybody can appreciate that, because at one point, this was impossible.
Good Lord, I'm glad I asked for the short version.
Yeah, that was like I said, I prefaced it in my three thoughts that my mind is in 5,000 different places. you got like 15 of them.
Sure. No problem. No problem. No, we loved it. So, you know, this obviously a huge week for Trevor every year. But with game day, with him being able to bring his daughter up and his lovely bride and get to, you know, do it in this new capacity that he and I have kind of started together with football coverage of the Bison, I think is a really exciting weekend for everybody. And we're really, really juiced up for what the future holds, and certainly for what this weekend holds. No question about that. Another folks with a bright future is Zach Johnson. I think a guy that is, well, I know a guy because I literally talked to a New York Giants scout about this on Saturday, is a guy that's getting pro looks. People are looking, is someone I think that is really benefiting from his move inside to guard, because I think if he's going to be a successful NFL player, it's going to be like Joe Haig and Billy Turner, and that is getting kicked inside and going to play guard at the next level. So getting his senior year to do it now, I think is a big deal. But we talked about that position switch, talked about, you know, playing with Carson, playing with Tanner Volson for so long, and now playing with Carson Schoening, and the differences kind of between blocking for Trey and blocking for Easton. It was just a good conversation. And if you're kind of an old line play nerd, I think you're really going to enjoy it, because we get into some of the, you know, more technical points of the differences between play and tackle and guard. We talk about what his favorite call is, you know, when Trey gets a call, and what excites him the most when it comes out in the huddle. So I hope you guys really really enjoy my conversation with Zeej right here.
Senior, North Dakota State offensive guard Zach Johnson. Zach, how are we doing?
Good, how are you?
I think I kind of want to start there. You were an All-American level, or at least an All-Conference level right tackle. Tackle's kind of the, if there is one, it's the sexy position on the offensive line. What, kind of walk me through the transition to guard. Was this something that Coach Blazek brought up to you? I mean, how did this whole conversation start?
It all started in the spring. Cordell was out, and Cordell's been playing guard, kind of the backup guard for the past couple of years. And it was just one of those things where they knew that I was as physical as a lot of the other guys, and just to come out and say, let's play at guard, and kind of just went from there. So just won the role.
Do you feel like, even though it might have been a happenstance type of deal, do you feel like maybe this is actually what's best for you and Cordell's body types and your skill sets? I mean, do you think this maybe even makes more sense?
Sometimes, in a way. I mean, I definitely focused 3 years on a spot and a position, and having that transition is definitely difficult, going from taking a vertical set in pass pro to now not being as vertical and more open with it. There's a lot of things that go into all of it, so yeah.
Do you feel like you're a better guard here in week 7 and 8 than you were like even against Butler?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, learning every day is one of the things that we talk about, and Coach Rowe has helped me tremendously, and so has Coach Blazek on the right pulls, the right footwork, and how to come out flat, out fast. So,
how much more pulling is there from the guard position than there was at tackle? Because North Dakota State will pull the tackle occasionally.
Yeah, we put in a lot of pulling tackles last year, just because me and Dylan are both pretty athletic,
yeah.
And that was a huge key, and it was really good to put it into the offense. But I mean, when it comes back to our power game and how well we are and defined of running the power, having that guy out of the A-gap is a huge factor in having the pulling guard.
Is that your favorite call now when it comes in and Trey calls it out?
Yeah, I think so.
I want to talk about Trey a little bit. Who doesn't?
Yeah.
How impressed are you with his abilities as a freshman? I think sometimes watching him play, he's so good that it's difficult for me even sometimes to remember that it's his first year.
Yeah, I think for me too, I forget that too. When he first got that spot, I told him straight up, I said, I'll work with you. I mean, I've been in the huddle at Stick, and so was Dylan. And when Stick came in there, he was definitely defined in what he wanted to do in the role. And we had our team captain practices, and that's when, like, the quarterback will take charge and stuff. And, I mean, it was some stuff that Trey had to get used to, and just kind of more defining his role and being like, here's what we're doing, let's do it. And, like, just, yeah, it's kind of one of those things that we have really talked about and we've made improvements on, and he's doing a tremendous job.
You've won Offensive Lineman of the Week this year, haven't you?
Yep.
Yeah, so the entire right side of the offensive line has at one point or another won, you know, Offensive Lineman of the Week in the conference. What does Cordell do well? What has kind of been his development from a guy that I kind of thought was a little bit sort of basketball player build to be playing guard to now. I mean, he's like what God intended when Bill tackles.
Yeah, especially when he got his new hips. that really helped him out. He's done a tremendous job of being physical. Like I said, physicality is one of the things we really talk about around here. And being on an offensive line tackle spot and you're not physical, it's pretty hard to go in there and do. But Cordell definitely brings out the physicality, and he helps me move that guy to the gap just as much as anyone would. So
Tanner Bolson was a hell of a football player.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously being Cordell's brother, what have you noticed that Carson does maybe a little bit differently? Because I have found it difficult to see a big drop-off in play. I mean, Tanner was a great player, but I think Carson has been exceptional.
Carson, yeah, for sure. Tanner just had that work ethic of what he wants to do every day, just shut up and work. And I'm sure he learned that from his dad out in North Dakota. But, I mean, Carson does pretty much the same thing. And it was kind of cool to see how Carson developed throughout the spring. And being in the huddle with Carson and being like, all right, well, here's what we're doing. We got our gap schemes going this way. Or, I mean, we got our slip blocks or something like that. I mean, just having those double teams going up to places and him calling them out is kind of new to me sometimes. But when I hear his voice and he's pretty firm on what we're doing and I'm along with it and I know exactly what he's doing. And it's kind of good that I can double check on what he's doing, make sure he's right too. So,
run blocking or pass blocking?
Run.
Of course. Yeah. You guys are all the same.
Yeah.
I kind of want to go back to last week a little bit. It's kind of funny. I think the expectations that the program has developed where you win a conference game 22-0 and people are asking what went wrong.
Right.
But I kind of do want to talk about what some of the offensive issues were. I think that you guys as an offense would be lying if you said your expectation was 3 touchdowns and no field goals in that game. And one of the comments that I kind of want to latch onto a little bit here is Coach Entz mentioned that you just didn't feel like all 11 guys were completely synced up in the run game. Kind of expand on that a little bit.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's obviously 11 guys out there, and, I mean, one guy slips on their mind, and it kind of just all falls apart, and somebody fits in a gap, and you're not intending that, and it's one of those things you just got to stay focused and make sure everybody's on the same page at the same time.
What do you guys need to improve on to have an excellent showing down at South Dakota State?
I think more of just the physicality and the focus. We have the ability and the work ethic. I think we just need to focus and go out there and determine.
No one was around the last 2 times, you know, when College Game Day was at a Bison game. Obviously, that was in Fargo. This is down in Brookings.
Yep.
How are you guys trying, kind of maintaining focus? This is a rivalry game. You're a relatively young team. I mean, you're not, but you have a lot of young teammates that are playing big roles.
Yeah.
And this is a nationally televised thing. I mean, College Game Day is huge. You probably grew up watching College Game Day on Saturday mornings. What's the focus like, and who's kind of taking on that role? Is it the coaches? Is it the seniors? Is it the captains?
Yeah, it's for sure the seniors. We've talked about it, like the coaches and everything. He's relying on us as seniors. I mean, it's me, Ben, Garrett Maelstrom on the offense, really, that are seniors, and the rest are all young guys, like you said.
Yeah.
It takes a lot. I mean, I rely on Dylan and Cordell and Cars too to help me out. I mean, the O-line is just such an important role to provide that that energy throughout practice and make sure we're focused and locked in to get us through that touchdown. So when it comes down to who is doing it, it's relying really on us seniors.
Finish the sentence for me and I'll let you go. North Dakota State raises the Dakota marker on Saturday if the Bison win on Saturday if
we're physical and dominant.
We want to thank the North Dakota State Sports Information Department for making Zach available to us, and we certainly want to thank Zach for his time. That was really insightful. You can tell he's fired up for the Dakota marker game, and he's a senior. This is a big one for the seniors. There's absolutely no question about it. All right, Trev, let's finally get to talking a little ball, and as you folks have probably figured out, this is gonna be a long show, and the reason this is gonna be a long show is that we give the people what they want, we give the people what we need. This show specifically is for all of y'all who are making the trip down south. I'm trying to stretch this baby out over an hour, so that you get at least halfway to Brookings before you got to flip on something else. So I want you guys to know that this show is this long because I'm thinking about you and I'm thinking about your trip down south and your time in the car. What do we think, Trevor, of Jabori Gibbs? I think you had a chance to at least watch him play against Minnesota where he struggled, but overall I would say not a tremendously impressive resume. You know, we're talking about a guy running the ball for 2.4 yards a carry, by the way, with a long of 63. So he's got net 77 yards rushing on the year with 163 yard run, which means on his other 31 carries, he has 14 yards. Anyway, I'm confused. His numbers have me all sorts of messed up, but a 58%, 59% completion clip, a 10-4 touchdown to interception ratio. I got to tell you that Trey Lance, this kid is not. What have you been impressed? What have been your impressions with Jabari Gibbs? Because the seasons that I think North Dakota State got something taken away from them by the Jacks, a lot of that had to do with big time Terran performances.
Yeah, the last two quarterbacks at South Dakota State, so Austin Sumner and Terran Christian, Jabari Gibbs is not there. You know, I think he does have a skill set that could get to that point. He's showing flashes of it in the short clips that I've seen of him and in the Minnesota game, but his numbers do not reflect a massive threat for what South Dakota State has shown in the past. If you want to play a comparison game, I know everyone's different players, everyone has different styles, and everyone's at different stages of their development and career, but a 10-4 touchdown interception ratio, he's less than 60% completion percentage. It's not awful being just shy of that to any sense of the word, but he's not a guy that's going to pick you apart. I know he's missed a couple games. So in terms of just overall numbers, it's not just going to jump out at you, but like you said, he's got whatever his rushing average is with the long of 63 in there. It's, you know, that kind of throws it off. And I'm not looking at Jabari Gibbs as being the reason South Dakota State would come out with a W.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where we're at, right, is specifically that game where I think Carson lost at home, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe it was Easton. I can't remember, but I remember Winicky catching a touchdown basically as time expired to win that game, and they had come out with a Terran Christian package that was a completely unscouted look. It was a quarterback run, you know, where they used the tailback as a lead blocker, so they outnumber the guys in the box, and it was something that they hadn't shown at all, and Stig kept it in his pocket for that game, and it literally won them the game. So you always wonder what kind of unscouted looks you're going to get from Stig, what the Jacks have been kind of hiding up their sleeves, because honestly, it really does seem like this game is their Super Bowl every year, and it certainly is an important game for North Dakota State, but man, whether it's stuff they haven't shown before or legitimate trick plays, Stiglmeyer does absolutely everything that he can in his power to beat the Bison. That is for sure. Two guys that are going to maybe help him do it this weekend, though, are, in my opinion, legit guys that are at the top of their game. We have questions about Jabari Gibbs. I have no questions about Pierre Strong Jr. And Cade Johnson. These guys are elite level dudes. And you know what? The Jacks always seem to have dudes. You kind of thought that maybe after Goddard and Winicky were gone, they were going to not necessarily struggle, but they weren't going to get just absolute studs at the skill position. And lo and behold, you've got Pierre Strong averaging 8+ yards a carry. And then, you know, you've got Cade Johnson averaging 19 yards a catch with 31 receptions and 6 scores.
Yeah, Pierre Strong, he's a sophomore now, right? He's still pretty young, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think Pierre was a true freshman last.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure he is a sophomore. True sophomore, retro sophomore, whatever it is. I mean, you could tell last year that this kid was going to be a stud and pose problems for years to come. But there's no question about his ability. He's a strong downhill runner. He's slippery. He's quick. He has a very good burst. So that kid will be a load to bring down, but no different than, I mean, Zach Zenner, Kyle Manette. You know, they've had a handful of other guys that have been tough. Mikey Daniel, he's another running back that's a load. I remember watching him in his high school days. He was actually coached by a friend of mine that I played high school ball with in Brookings for a couple years. And then Kay Johnson, a very athletic kid on the edge. He seems to come down with quite a bit thrown his way. He's averaging just shy of something like 5 receptions a game. But like you said, Ross, they always have a number of guys that seem to be dudes at the skill positions. They've had Goddard, they've had Winicky, they've had Zenner, Taron Christian, even to an extent as a quarterback. So offense of firepower at Coughlin Alumni hasn't been a shortage. And outside of Jabari Gibbs, you know, not trying to throw shade at him to any sense, his job will be to get the ball to Mr. Strong and Mr. Johnson.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's kind of, I think, the number one road to success for these guys is get the ball out of Jabari's hands as soon as possible and get it to a playmaker. And I think the important thing is that they don't allow, because North Dakota State has had the opportunity to get some young defensive linemen some serious reps. They've had a bunch of guys down lately. Derek Tuska didn't even play the week prior against Missouri State. So they have some developing kids in the pass rush group that are ready to get after it and ready to get after Jabari Gibbs. So the key for them is going to be to get the defensive linemen moving from side to side as far as dealing with perimeter, you know, pops or slants or whatever. Get the ball out of Gibbs's hand. And this is something that South Dakota State has done over and over. And they also do some of the riding the mesh runs that North Dakota State will use, where they'll use jet, they'll fake a jet and run zone read or inside zone, or they'll potentially fake a jet and have a quarterback keeper. There's a lot of stuff similar offensively and defensively that both teams do in very similar ways. So they're going to be able to get a good look in practice. I don't know who's going to play Jabari Gibbs on the scout team, but I do know that the plan for South Dakota State, if they're going to win this game, is not going to be to have Jabari drop back 38 times like he's Taron Christian and try and pick this defensive backfield apart, because it's just not going to work that way. The other thing I want to kind of discuss is this offensive line for the Jacks. And where that kind of ties into is strength of schedule. And that's what I really want to talk about, because I think you kind of have to ask, have they played anyone? And yes, they played the Gophers. We all saw it. And the Gophers are, I'm not going to go so far as to say they're a good team, but they are undefeated. And they're probably going to be undefeated for 2 more weeks. I think they're going to lose their last 3 games, but it doesn't matter. They're a Power 5 team that hasn't lost a game yet, and that counts for something. But you look at a 38-10 win over Drake, and boy, you would wish that they'd beat Drake by more. And 28-10 over SIU, and boy, you wish they kind of would win that game by more. And Youngstown State looks kind of awful, and Youngstown State was winning that game for a while. They gave up 23 points to Indiana State, who Indiana State's a complete mess. I think as you look up and down this South Dakota State schedule, it's full of wins, but I'm not sure it's full of great wins. And that kind of ties into what I'm talking about as far as this offensive line. Yes, it's impressive to be averaging 6.2 yards a rush, but against these opponents, is it legit? And are they going to be able to do that against North Dakota State? Trev, what are your thoughts on the strength of schedule here? What are your thoughts on South Dakota State's ability to run the ball? I mean, they're not going to run it for 6 yards a carry against the Bison, I can tell you that. But I think they can be somewhat successful if they run it for 4.5.
Yeah, well, even running it for 4.5 against Code Green is still fairly impressive. You know, I don't think that's going to be outlandish, but I've also seen them rush for negative 10 against us before too. I think that was like the year after I finished up in 2015. But according to Sagarin, their strength of schedule rating is 181. North Dakota State sits at 163. And that is skewed even more simply because their strength of schedule is heightened because of University of Minnesota. And you look at the Youngstown game, they were down 2 scores. I think it was 21-9 going into the fourth quarter. I was watching that very closely on my little ESPN Plus deal. And they're not blowing the teams out that you would expect, like a Drake or a Long Island, as like a 55-0. And, you know, certainly NDSU didn't do that against Missouri State last week. Okay, but it was still a shutout. And is Missouri State Long Island, and is Missouri State Drake? Well, I think Missouri State goes 2-0 against those opponents. And
yeah, and you have those destructive wins for North Dakota State. Now you do have 43-7 over Southern Utah. That did happen.
Yeah, I mean, overall, when you look at the two strength of schedules, obviously Sagarin agrees. There's a huge difference in who each team has played, and I think both teams have rushed for exactly 6.2 yards per carry. That can stand out. That can be something going into a game that you're thinking, okay, they might have something here. They do have Pierre Strong. They do have Mikey Daniel who can come in short yarded situations, goal line, red zone, etc. But when you have the defensive prowess that North Dakota State has, who they clearly have not seen yet, yes, Minnesota fans listening might want to argue that to some capacity, but you would be naive to think that you put the guys in green on the field the same day that they played them that they would come out with a win. Talking University of Minnesota. The answer is no. If you want to debate, come find me. But South Dakota State rushing for 6.2 yards per carry on Saturday is not going to happen simply because they have not proven that they can do that against superior competition. Now, granted, you can only play the teams on your schedule, so it has to be seen. But I haven't seen enough out of this O-line in the 3 games that I have watched of them to show that they're going to be able to push guys like Derek Tuska backwards.
Yeah, I think that's a legitimate concern, especially Costner Ching is continuing to progress as a run defender. Cole Karch is, I think it seems like he's healthy. It seems like Spencer Wagey is starting to get healthy. There's another South Dakota kid in Spence Wagey that felt like he was maybe a little bit under recruited by South Dakota State, which, by the way, what the hell are you doing if you're South Dakota State and you're not recruiting Spencer Wagey from Watertown? He's 6'5", moves like JJ, whatever. I'm going to get off. I mean, I don't understand how Minnesota wasn't on him, to be honest. But, you know, obviously glad he's at North Dakota State. It's going to be fun to cover him for the next 2 years. Here's a guy that I think stokes the fire a little bit, and that's Christian Rosenboom. And this is something, that I struggle with a little bit. Coach Stig has this reputation as a gentleman. I think that's what Brian McLaughlin called him on Twitter earlier this week. And I got to say, I haven't had a ton of face-to-face interactions with him. I've done 3 post-game press conferences that he was a part of. I've asked him questions. He's answered them. But I have a hard time with this saintly vision of Stig, and yeah, obviously driving drunk is not cool, but that's not really what this is about. What this is more about is what was done to Levon Perry when you were there, what has consistently happened with head injuries there and leaving kids in the game, and then what Christian Rosenboom did, and it's on video, everybody's seen it, and that was twist and wrench and roll on Bruce Anderson's ankle a couple of years ago until it popped and he sprained it and was out for a couple of weeks. And Rosenboom's a really good player, and the coaching staff, said nothing but nice things about him. Coach Ants didn't call him dirty, didn't call him anything. Just said he's one of the best players we have at the FCS level. But is a play like what he did and what happened to Levon and you know, is this dirty rivalry? I mean, is there any teeth to this, or is this kind of just fans being fans? I mean, there is, of course, the marker and the fact that, you know, South Dakota State has won the Rock a couple of times, but never won in Frisco, or frankly, even been to Frisco. But beyond that, I mean, is there legitimate beef? Is there an actual reason to dislike these guys,
well,
Trev?
I think the reason that there is a rivalry, and that the reason it has the I don't even know the word I'm looking for, but it has the weight of it that you can feel, is because, yeah, the venom. That's a perfect word. The reason it has the venom is because of plays like Levon Perry getting hurt when the ball was dead. Plays like Christian Rosenboom rolling, Bruce Anderson's ankle? Bruce.
Yeah, it was Bruce's ankle.
And obviously coming out with a victory in Fargo to take away the marker for the first time in years. And then going to Brookings and repeating it the next year and being the only loss that the 2017 Bison incurred. The rivalry has the venom and the weight because of those instances. Now, to say that if there's teeth behind, okay, there was this incident, this incident, this incident, I don't know. I don't think that it's being taught in their locker room to go injure players. I don't think that that's a straightforward statement. I would be shocked, to be honest. But, you know, the way that it is approached from one side versus the way that it's approached from another, I think when you have that many scenarios, I don't think you can say just, you know, one or maybe two instances. You could say it's isolated. It's a guy getting too passionate and a guy getting letting his emotions get the best of him. But you have one after the other and then another. I don't know. Maybe one side approaches it a different way than what it was approached in Fargo. At least I can speak for when I play. You know, who's to say? I think it's fun for the fans to talk about. I think it adds to the weight and the venom, as you say, to the whole rivalry. And I think it's what makes college football great, really. And it's unfortunate that guys had to get injured in that process. But, you know, there's validity to say what has occurred on the field that appears cheap has added to the rivalry. It definitely has, because I know, I won't repeat it, but I know what was said in the locker rooms after. I know what the player's viewpoint was about it. Whether it's valid or true or not, I don't know. It's really neither here or there. I would like to give them the benefit of the doubt and don't think it was intentional, but the fact that they maybe let their emotions get in the way, and I don't know, the fans like to call it little brother syndrome. Maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. But either way, it creates a great atmosphere and a great rivalry, and is part of the reason why College Game Day is now coming.
Yeah, and I think that's a really interesting take on that, in that you feel like you want to believe that it's not taught. And I actually think I probably agree with you. I think it would be very unlikely that you have a Greg Williams Bounty Gate type situation where a college coach is, you know, suggesting that his players go out and injure other players. I think you're right. I don't think that's happening. I think that's very unlikely. At the same time, though, I think that North Dakota State fans and people close to the program would have hoped that there was more of a zero tolerance policy for stuff like that, and that maybe somebody came out and said that that wasn't cool, or maybe a suspension for a quarter or a half, or just some, you know, an apology, even just some recognition that what went on was not okay, which obviously they never got. Anyway, I want to talk a little bit about the defensive backs. We know Roseboom's good. We know that they like to rotate 8-9 guys on the defensive line, just like North Dakota State. But I want to talk about this group of defensive backs because Jordan Brown, and he got Easton last year with an awesome interception on a ball that was a little bit behind Phoenix Sproles, if I remember correctly. But these are guys that I'm not convinced of the talent level. And what I mean by that, you know, you have opponents actually outpassing the Jacks, 187 to 184.4. You've got 8 touchdowns against. And again, you know, 1,300 yards passing against this defense. We're talking about schools that aren't very good, teams that aren't very good. In fact, a Gophers team that preferred to run the ball. So it's not like Tanner Morgan, as well as he's playing now, was, you know, spinning the ball all over the yard and really adding a ton to this 1,300 yard total. I wonder if with South Dakota State only giving up 2.9 a carry and giving up 187 passing yards per game, giving up an opponent's rating, quarterback rating of 114.7. Do you think today, or do you think Saturday might be kind of a Trey Lance day if these DBs can't hang? Because you lose a guy, and you know, Brandon Snyder got victimized a lot, not only when he was at North Dakota State, but when he was at Iowa as well. But you know, somebody couldn't beat out Brandon Snyder for that job, and that somebody is starting now. And you lose an NFL caliber cornerback in Jordan Brown. Could this be kind of a Trey Christian Phoenix kind of day?
Yeah, I mean. I think any day could be a day for all three of those guys. Those dudes are horses. And, you know, I think Saturday I would like to see a coming out party, so to speak, where they're just kind of having fun and playing 7-on-7. Because where they stand athletically, where I view the South Dakota State secondary right now athletically, I think those guys should have a heyday. There is no Jordan Brown back there to shut somebody down and make you one-dimensional and say, okay, it's you versus him. It's your next best versus your next best. And when you got 5, 11, and 1 out there, it's scary. And those guys have an opportunity to show all of FCS football what they're capable of. And based off their maturity level that I have seen to date, I think that's what I'm expecting. I'm anticipating that heavily. I don't know. You know, I've been trying to think through, okay, how is that going to get involved in the first 10 plays? Probably expect maybe a smoke or a tunnel screen to some capacity. Maybe expect a deep ball right away. You know, is that a post or a 9? I don't really know. But I do think that the athleticism of the guys in green on the edges and the athleticism on the third level for the Jacks is going to get – shown in some capacity early and maybe often. So, you know, you could be looking at a 300 yard, 4 to 5 touchdown type performance, from number 5.
And boy, wouldn't that be something? I mean, especially, not a nationally televised game, but a nationally televised pregame show. Then you go to, you know, Midco Sports Network and the North Dakota Sports Network are all going to have this game. It's on ESPN Plus. It's going to be a big deal. I mean, people are going to watch this game. That's for sure. Anybody up in this neck of the woods understands that it's a big time. It's a big deal. It's a huge deal. North Dakota State right now, 19-point favorites. Boy, that seems like a lot for a game like this. But then I look at the tape and I see it. I mean, they have a significant up, like Green Bay. Good Lord. All the days are running together, folks. North Dakota State has a huge, huge advantage at quarterback. And I know that Jabari Gibbs won Offensive Player of the Year or Offensive Player of the Week, you know, 1 week and whatever. But just watch the tape. I mean, the 4 interceptions, the 58% completion, he's not on the same level. And I said that, you know, he absolutely cost them the game against the Gophers for sure. And beyond that, I don't think that South Dakota State or that atmosphere is going to make up for that difference. You know, there's not more talent in Brookings. And that's what you have to have. I mean, that's what happened when they did win those games, was Goddard and Winicky were just that good. And they had those dudes. And Cade Johnson's a hell of a player. Pierre Strong's a hell of a player. You also saw a guy in James Robinson who's probably better than Pierre Strong. His team got beat by 34 at home. I'm really struggling with this, and that's where I guess we're going to go ahead and get to the score predictions. I'm going to predict a close Bison victory. So for those of you that enjoy gambling or the Las Vegas aspect of this, I'm going to have a South Dakota State cover here. 28-17 Bison is my prediction in a relatively low scoring game. South Dakota State pretty comfortably covers the spread, but that's what I'm thinking is 28-17 Herd. And I'm also going to make a second prediction, which is that Lee Corso puts the Bison head on. And well, you know what? Not that much happens, because I actually anticipate the game day crowd to be about 50-50. Trevor, what is your score prediction?
I didn't know what the spread was coming in. So if it's a 19-point spread, I have a push. So for the degenerates out there, you're getting your money back, according to me.
Yeah,
I'm going 33-14 NDSU with a fourth quarter pull away. I'm thinking it's going to be like a, you know, like a 21-14-ish game going into the fourth quarter. I think toughness and togetherness, pride and conditioning, an old mantra that Coach Kramer brought us, is going to take hold true in the fourth. So I'm going 33-14. I will be rooting for a 33-3 prediction for obvious reasons. Being number three was my number, and that would be poetic justice. So rooting for 33-3, predicting it'll be 33-14.
Yeah, and I think that fourth quarter runaway thing could happen. Although it's going to be probably pretty freaking cold in the morning, but that wonderful forecast of 56 and mostly sunny is holding. 15-mile-an-hour winds, which the way that stadium is set up, I don't think is going to completely limit the passing game. And you know, that honestly is too a place where having a guy with an absolute rocket for a right arm is a big deal. And then that is something that Trey Lance absolutely possesses. So the ability to throw the ball in the wind when the opponents maybe can't is a big deal, because Jabari Gibbs is a good athlete, but you can really see the windup and the effort that he puts into a lot of his intermediate and long throws. Whereas, as I pointed out on Twitter, you know, Trey is flick of the wristing at 60 yards. It's a big deal in wind and in weather, and so far, and knock on wood, but there isn't going to be a ton of weather. Hey, Trev, you know what? This is a long show. Thank you so much for your time tonight. Guys, thanks so much for listening, especially if you're still listening after this long. The number one way to support Trevor and I in this new venture is to become a VIP member of the Bison Report. You know what? That just got a lot easier. We went from 30% off of an annual subscription to 50% off of an annual VIP pass. We are talking about $53.70 for a year of VIP access to the Bison Report. You can get access to the entire 24/7 sports network. There's also another value added that's coming down the pike. I'm not going to let you guys know what it is, but cord cutters, streamers, you're going to freaking love it. But right now, man, this is just it's a heck of a deal. If you're not even, you know what, if you're not convinced, do the monthly option. Pay $1 for the first month. It's going to be $9.95 after that, but you can upgrade at any time to the annual. So why don't you pay $1 for that first month, see all the awesome content. We're rocking out 3 or 4 stories every day. Every single day, there's some sort of content coming in the morning, coming around lunch, and coming in the afternoon, if not with a little extra thrown in for you guys there. But try us for $1 with the monthly option, and then go ahead and click the upgrade to the annual for $53.70. It's $4.48 a month. We are talking less than the price of whatever it is you grab for lunch. It's probably right around whatever you're, you know, whipping through Starbucks and grabbing that coffee. It is just an absolutely tremendous value, and I promise it doesn't sound like a lot of money, but if we get 10, 12, 15 of you to join the cause, it's a huge deal for us, and it allows us to create content that we hope you guys absolutely love because we love creating it for you. One last time, thanks everyone for listening, and go Bison.